we're going to get up the coffee. Okay, so now onto a series of papers to do with the poll.
Yep, so I hope you've all had your coffee because we're going to do three in a row. And they're all on the same topic.
We'll meet to start. Main course.
Yep. Start our main course design. I don't know if they're really placed that way, but. Right, so agenda paper two. That's the first of our revolving credit card papers. And this paper addresses a question regarding the scope of paragraph 5520 of IFRS 9. And so the submitter notes that paragraph 5520 describes the type of financial instrument within its scope, and that the application guidance set out in paragraph B5539 of IFRS 9 goes on to describe what are considered to be the general characteristics of such financial instruments. And the submitter questions whether, when determining if a financial instrument is within the scope of paragraph 5520, these general characteristics should be considered to be required characteristics or merely examples of typical characteristics. And in the submitter's view, that if they're considered to be required characteristics, this may result in a more narrow application of the scope of paragraph 5520. And in order to illustrate the issue, the submitter describes a number of different types of multi-purpose credit facilities that a lender may provide, and the key features of those types of facilities are described in paragraph 13 of the agenda paper. And in particular, the submitter points out that one of the general characteristics cited in paragraph B5539A is that financial instruments in the scope of paragraph 5520 do not have a fixed term or repayment structure. And in this regard, the submitter questions whether either of the following characteristics would prevent a facility from being within the scope of that paragraph. So, for example, if there was an immediately revocable facility but had a stated fixed maturity of 5 years, or alternatively, an immediately revocable facility with no fixed maturity term but when drawn had the ability to take the form of a loan which then had a fixed term maturity of, say, 5 years. So in analysing this issue, we firstly point out that the exception in paragraph 5520 was intended to be limited in nature, and that's highlighted by the wording of the paragraph itself and also the associated discussions and the basis of conclusions. And in addition, those discussions do provide some additional context around the rationale behind the exception and the types of financial instruments that respondents were concerned about, namely revolving credit and overdraft facilities which are managed on a collective basis, and where facilities and where expected credit losses are estimated on an overall facility level, so looking at the drawn and undrawn components in combination. And we also noted that respondents were concerned that if the requirements of paragraph 5519 of IFRS 9 were applied to those types of facilities, it would have resulted in expected credit losses being measured over a very short period, which was not the way in which those facilities were managed. So turning then to the main question of scope, we note that an entity would be required to consider the description set out in paragraph 5520 together with the supporting application guidance in B5539. And we made the following observations in looking at those two areas of guidance. So first of all, we noted that the description itself in paragraph 5520 highlights three key characteristics that a financial instrument within its scope must display. And they are that the financial instrument must be of a type that has the ability to have both a loan and undrawn commitment component, and that the entity must have the contractual ability to demand repayment of the loan component and to cancel the undrawn commitment component, and lastly, that the entity's exposure to credit losses is not limited to the contractual notice period. And then we also noted that the characteristics described in paragraph B5539 are consistent with that description, and our supporting analysis of this is set out in paragraph 21 of the agenda paper. So consequently, within the context of the types of multipurpose credit facilities described by the submitter, we observe that having determined the appropriate unit of account to which the impairment requirements of IFRS 9 should be applied, the entity will be required to consider both paragraph 5520 and the related application guidance, and that it would be necessary to assess all of the specific characteristics of those facilities, including how they were managed, in order to make that determination of whether they fell within the scope of 5520. And turning then to the two specific questions raised by the submitter regarding the five-year fixed-term characteristic, we set out our observations and our thoughts on that in paragraph 24 of the agenda paper. And in summary, we noted that a credit facility that has a fixed term but is immediately revocable without cause is a characteristic that would not seem inconsistent with the type of facility described in paragraph 5520 or B5539, because the lender has a contractual ability to demand to cancel the undrawn commitment at any point, whereas a credit facility that is immediately revocable but once drawn, the repayment term has become fixed and the lender cannot demand repayment at any time, is a characteristic that does seem inconsistent with the type of facility described in paragraph 5520, because the lender doesn't have this contractual ability to demand repayment of the drawn exposure. And we noted that that would be inconsistent with the notion of the expected credit losses being estimated for the drawn and undrawn components as one. And lastly then, we just draw your attention to the fact that IFRS 7 does require detailed credit risk disclosures and does require an entity to explain assumptions used to measure expected credit losses. And considering the types of potentially complex multi-purpose facilities that are described by the submitter, we noted that that would probably be an important disclosure. And so that's the summary of the issue in AP2 and the first of our revolving papers. So I'll open it up for comments.
Sorry. Thank you very much. I agree with the staff's view, and general characteristics are set out in paragraph B, 5539, are not required characteristics. And even if a financial instrument doesn't have exact same characteristics as set out in B, 5539, it could still fall into the scope of paragraph 5520. So B, 5539 should be used as a supplemental guidance. Thank you.
So does that mean you think the key is making sure that the characteristics are consistent with 5520 itself? Yes. Alan?
Hi. As regards to these two specific questions raised in the paper, I tend to agree the observations made by ASB staff. That is, the financial instrument must satisfy all these three characteristics to be within the scope of the paragraph 5520 W+9. Also, due to the varieties of the financial instruments, we have to conduct a comprehensive analysis on a case-by-case basis to check all of the financial instruments features, including how that feature, how that facility was managed, and how the expected credit losses were estimated to determine whether it falls into the scope of the 5520.
Thank you. George?
So I took away from this that the requirements in 5520, as listed in paragraph 19 of the staff paper, those are must requirements, must have all of these. I think when people have been looking at this, though, they've been actually looking more at B5539, where it uses the words generally have these characteristics. And the big issue really is if they manage them on a collective basis or not. Now, managing on a collective basis to me is kind of similar to 5520C, or is at least relevant to whether you know, despite what the contract says, the entity's exposure to loss is not limited to those contractual notice periods. And I think therefore if you manage it collectively, you're more likely to end up having to worry about that paragraph. But I think, you know, when people are trying to figure out, do I want to be or do I not want to be in 5520, they're looking for anything that would be an exception so that I wouldn't have to follow it. And we find this issue about, and give you an example, things like corporate overdrafts that may be managed individually. You know, people might try to argue because it's not managed collectively, therefore I'm not in the scope of 5520, even though I think it's clearly a revolving type of facility. And so there was, that was an example of another question we asked about this. I think the other issue that's unfortunate in the paper, in paragraph 23, this whole issue about unit of account was simply left as something that had to be decided. And many of the facilities examples that are cited in paragraph 13, the general pieces, so the general terms, of which there are many, many different types out in the market in different countries, the real issue is it one giant revolving facility, or is it a revolving facility that has drawn pieces, and what is left is a revolving unit of item on its own. And so the struggle we've had is, especially where these loans, the pieces of these, I call them multifaceted facilities, are related to each other. So the total, you know, undrawn limit of all these pieces is at a maximum, and it all links to a single piece of collateral. Is that just one giant revolver for which there are some drawn pieces, or is it really three, you know, multiple pieces? It's a drawn, an amortizing loan and a line of credit, which you should look at separately. So I think, unfortunately, the question really does boil down to the piece that I don't share the staff paper addressed, which is how do you determine unit of account when there's a relationship between different pieces of a facility, some of which are revolving and some of which are clearly not revolving. So that's the only, I don't know if there's any more criteria that you think people should look at in determining unit of account, but if the limit on the revolving piece, on the line of credit piece, is dependent on what happens in the others, they are not distinctly separate, even though from my experience, the way banks manage this stuff is they're almost independent of each other. It's a line of credit, it's an amortizing loan, it could also be even a credit card in a retail type example. And all those things link to, say, the collateral in your house. And so that's where I'm struggling with the question that didn't get answered in the paper.
Mm. I think in response to what you're saying, and I think it's hard for us to give an answer on that in the paper because it's always going to be so fact-specific. But I think what helped me in this paper and preparing for it was going back and looking at the context of the discussions and also 5520, because if you look at what 5520 was trying to capture and it's sort of reflected in what's then in B5539, the board was sort of convinced that there was a special case only in a fairly narrow set of circumstances. And the set of circumstances that the board had in mind, which I think as background sort of helps with the unit of account, so that's why I'm addressing it to you, probably wondering what the point was a very specific scenario, and it was a scenario where people were, I think, in many cases wanted the board to look beyond the contractual life, and as a general proposition the board did not want to do that. But there was the circumstance where the board did have some sympathy for it was where you had the situation where you had one facility that could be drawn and undrawn, and we're trying to make a distinction between measuring the expected credit losses on the drawn piece as distinct from the undrawn piece was not really a simple thing to ask people to do because of the interrelationship and because of the variability in the amount of drawn and undrawn over time. So it's sort of your classic revolver type situation was what the board had in mind. And coupled with that was the situation where, and a part of that, sorry, was the fact that whether it was drawn or undrawn, you were sort of thinking of it as having a similar risk exposure because the maturity of the two things was similar, which is where this sort of repayable on demand bit came about, not just for the undrawn bit, but also if you drew it, how did it behave, which was brought out in the paper. And the other thing that people talked about was the fact that, so that was the sort of most complicated case, so the one where the board was sympathetic to doing something. And that was coupled with the situation where, in practice, the way the thing was managed was going to be that, for example, it was a retail portfolio where the only information or heads up that you were going to get that something was going wrong that would cause you to act would be based on quite late information and things like delinquencies. And so you had the situation where it would not be mitigated by credit risk management actions. And that's what you can see reflected in 39, because B5539, we talk about the fact that there's no fixed term or repayment structure and usually a short contractual cancellation period. And it's both the term, which is the undrawn bit, and the repayment structure because of the simultaneous sort of life for both pieces of it, even if it's drawn or undrawn. And the fact that you don't enforce it on a day-to-day management basis and that it's managed on a collective basis was to try and help people think about the context of when you would have a situation where you would not mitigate through your credit risk management actions. So if you think about it with that backdrop, where you've got a facility where a piece of it is a 30-year mortgage and another piece is a credit card, I don't think that that would be the sort of thing where you'd think that, firstly, the exposure is so similar, you're going to think about the losses in the same way, whether it's drawn or undrawn, or that it would necessarily, both parts would be have the same type of credit risk management.
And does that mean you think that informs what the unit of account is?
Yes.
So that the credit card is separate than the, than in your example, the mortgage?
30-year mortgage, yeah.
I mean, I like that answer, and that's what I would look for others to say, do you agree with that?
The unit of account, and also the fact that, that for me is one of the reasons, and it was something I'd sort of underappreciated until this fact pattern came in, so this was a very useful question for me, was the fact that the board was, I think, very consciously trying to come to the situation where the expected losses or the sort of expected life and behaviour of both pieces was the same, whether it was drawn or undrawn. And so that's why, in the case the staff have said, where if it's drawn, it's a 5-year maturity, means that it's then different to a facility where if it's drawn, it's repayable sort of on demand.
And that's where, depending on these, the way these things are legally set up and the exact precise terms, facts and circumstances are very different. And you do need to get into that level of detail to figure out which path you're supposed to follow.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. But for me, 5520 is the key thing, because that's the basic idea. But I do think that when you read B5539, even though it says generally, which is intentional, because of things like, is the term of the commitment period, the 5-year in the first example, does that throw you out? I think not, because if you look back at 5520, it's not inconsistent with the notion here. But it certainly, I think for me, when I read it, B5539, A, B and C, those sort of indicators, if you like, help frame your thinking for how to read 5520.
Well, can I ask about C then, because you bring that up? Because this issue about managed on a collective basis, yes or no? Like, people would like to say, if it's not managed on a collective basis, then I'm out. I don't have to follow 5520.
But the question for me then would be, managed on a collective basis is there because it was to help frame when would you be exposed to credit risk and expected credit losses would not be mitigated by credit risk management actions. It was to frame that. So does the way that it's managed, whether it's collective or not, end you up in a situation where you're not actually going to act and sort of draw on your contractual right to immediately repay because you're just not going to act?
But I think it wasn't really relevant element, because when we discussed that at the board, it was really the case which was brought to us was that, okay, this undrawn and drawn exposure was really managed by risk management together and only reviewed every, I don't know, half year. And that was a kind of element why we were able or why we were willing really to have this exception. And if somebody has brought to us, I think, a case where I think undrawn is managed every day, we would never have come to that conclusion. So I think it is relevant. Because otherwise, I think, why should you look at then together and say, okay, we look not on the contractual term, we look at really the behavior on that. And that was in that case made managed really when the risk management looked at the exposure together. And I think if that is not done, I think we would come to another sort of conclusion. And therefore, I think C is relevant.
Graham. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Sue. And thanks, Bernadette, again, for leading us through the discussion so well. So first of all, when I thought about the paper, I agree, Sue, with what you said. I think, you know, I initially thought about, okay, I think we've got separate units of account here in the fact pattern given. And you wouldn't then, on the back end, group those together to stick them into 5520, because it wouldn't meet 5520 in totality, because part of it would have characteristics that wouldn't match up with 5520. So we didn't think you would group them together and stick them back in. But one of the things I couldn't quite sort was, I think with revolvers, people know how to deal with the drawn portion. It's the undrawn portion that's hard. And so here, you've got an undrawn portion, and I guess you would allocate it all to the revolver, but that is maybe not how that undrawn portion will be used. And that feels a little funny. And so there is sort of a hanging question with this fact pattern to me as to how you consider the undrawn portion. And really what's driving that largely is, this is what's in the papers, is the demand, the requirement on the drawn portion that it be demandable, which doesn't necessarily impact the undrawn portion. They're sort of separate. And in any case, it makes it very difficult to think about the undrawn portion in an umbrella fact pattern like this, because I'm not sure how you predict its future behavior. So maybe that's something to think about, is if you've got a fact pattern like this, what do you do with the undrawn portion? Is that question clear?
Not entirely.
Okay, so if you've got separate units of account and you've got an undrawn portion that is potentially will be used on the term loan, or maybe it's a future term loan, or is do you allocate it all to the line of credit, I suppose?
But if you've concluded that you did have two separate units of account, so now you've just got an undrawn portion that's sort of been looked at in isolation.
Yes.
I don't think you'd be in 5520, right? So then you'd be back to contractual life.
But the revolving, there is a revolver attached to this that
okay.
might be in 5520.
If it has a revolving piece, then
yeah.
Okay. But then, so then why is it special?
Well, and maybe it's not, but it is possible to, in George, the fact pattern that George is talking about is that some of that undrawn portion might not get drawn against the revolver in the future. It might get drawn against as a future term loan or something, but you're considering it as part of the revolver. I don't know that that's a problem. I just want to make sure that is what, in fact,
there would be.
It's going to get drawn. If you've got a facility which, if drawn, would become a term loan,
mm-hmm.
then I think we're saying it's not in 5520.
But you can't know that
but
in this fact pattern.
Well, if your unit of account conclusion gets you to a situation where you've got a facility which is undrawn,
mm-hmm.
and it if drawn, it could be a term loan, then I think you're not in 5520.
Okay.
Well, and if and when that's drawn, if they decide to take a revolving facility at inception and then change a part of it to a term loan, then that change has to be kind of like a modification or you have to reconsider what the unit of account is if and when that happens. But often these things are granted. They're just giant revolvers at the beginning. And then the borrower can decide whether they want to use it that way or whether they want to take a part of that and allocate it to make it a term loan that then has amortizing cash flows to it.
Yeah, and I think the challenge there is I think that 5520 was designed for the simple case of things
of course.
Like
yeah.
a card.
Credit card, and I totally accept
and
that.
Now people are picking it up and saying, oh my
yeah.
God, I've got an undrawn
yeah.
facility, therefore I need to try and apply 5520.
Yeah.
It's meant to have a limited scope.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you have an undrawn piece
yeah.
which you really can use for a fixed 5-year term loan, you are out of 5520.
Yeah.
Because
at the
was
point
not,
they do that.
That was not the fact pattern where we have
I don't
yeah.
think necessarily at the point they do it. I think if you start off with an undrawn facility that, if drawn, will turn into a 5-year loan
yeah.
or could turn into a 5-year loan,
yeah.
there's a choice.
5520.
You're not in 5520.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
No, great.
At the origination.
Yeah.
The whole facility.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's helpful because I think one of the initial discussions we had is, would you try to allocate how it might be drawn? So that provides a lot of clarity.
Because it was designed. Why is that? Because it was designed.
Said it quietly.
Yes, but it's a fair question, and it's obviously what's causing the question to arise. And if you look at the basis, the board was trying to come up with an instrument where, over its life, whether it was drawn or undrawn, the two pieces could be thought of collectively when you think about expected credit losses. So that means if it were drawn and it became a term loan, so it's not repayable on demand, we don't think it's appropriate for people to be thinking of that in a sort of lump like 5520 asks you to do. Rather, you should be thinking about it in the normal model. So that then means you don't look beyond the contractual life, which was something, you know, I'd sort of, Phil, you were involved
yeah,
in
no,
some
I was,
of the discussions.
I was just going to add, specifically 5520 was designed to deal with those, you know, in a credit card environment where the contractual maturity was one day, but it was quite apparent that you were exposed to credit risk for more than one day. And so you didn't want an unintended outcome such that you had no credit impairment where you were exposed to credit risk. And so in those discussions, it was, well, if we can't use the contractual maturity, what is the appropriate period, which is where the behavioural discussions came in. And that was clarified in the last ITG, that that is constrained by that period which management has to define, which is the period over which you're exposed to credit risk. And you need to measure, you need to model that, you need to measure that across the components of drawn and undrawn. And I think that's where the rule came in.
But in addition to the fact that it was that you didn't really have only one day's risk to get out of because of the way you were managing it, etc., the other thing was the fact that if it was drawn, it had the short life as well, so that you could think about the exposure to credit risk on the undrawn and the drawn in a similar way, and they couldn't be separated, and that was that complexity that caused that to be part of it as well. Chris?
Well, some of the complexities around separating the drawn and the undrawn may be dealt with in one of the subsequent papers. But I'm a bit worried that there's some quite hard bright lines being drawn in discussion, because it seems there are some very complex facts, and I can see that part of what this paper does is say think about the unit of account, and that maybe help you navigate through. And yeah, so if you've got a 5-year term loan, that doesn't work, but maybe you've got other things with a customer that do fall within the scope of 5520. And I think a blanket statement that says, well, if something could result in a fixed term loan, then you know you're just outside 5520, just doesn't quite make sense to me. Firstly, I think many revolving facilities, the ones I've seen in practice, you know, you give somebody revolving facility for a number of years, and then they might draw down 3-month loans, and then at the end of 3 months they have to repay, but they can draw down another 3-month loan. But that, legally, what they've drawn down is a 3-month term loan. There's just an expectation at the end of it they'll get another 3-month loan. And I was thought that would be within the scope of 5520, assuming how the facility is structured and managed, that it can roll on that basis. That's revolving. And then this, the thing about having sort of umbrella facilities, yeah, many times I could see, well, it wouldn't work. I see why a 5-year term loan is out, where it's a 5-year credit exposure, that there'd be much expectation it would roll into another 5-year term loan. And a lot could happen during the next 5 years. You've got a 5-year exposure. But when somebody mentioned, well, I could have a mortgage and a credit card, and somehow they're linked, well, following the unit of account guide, so I could quite see how the mortgage is nothing to do with 5520, but the credit card looks like something that's in 5520, and you might be managing them separately, even though there's some linkage.
Not disagreeing with that. Yeah. And I do agree with you. I think that the 5-year one's an easy one for us to talk about because it seems like it's quite distinct. It's harder when it's shorter, 1, 3 months, etc. But what I think it is important to emphasise is the fact that in 5520, it doesn't just focus on the undrawn piece. Yes, and it says the entity's contractual ability to demand repayment, which is why in B5539A there's also a reference to the financial instruments do not have a fixed term or repayment structure. And this is because the board was thinking about these situations where it really is the case that you can't think about the expected losses differently for the drawn and the undrawn bit. And so we're going to have grey, where if it's drawn, it's short term, but I think that concept is important for people thinking about the scope of 5520.
I think you need to convey the greyness and how short term
I absolutely agree with that. I'm sort of overdoing it for emphasis, just because I think people are missing the relevance of what happens if it's drawn. Martin?
I mean, to Chris' point, I think 5520 was not really to give more guidance on undrawn piece. It was really a kind of combination of a drawn and undrawn scenario, which, as Bill has really said. And therefore, I think if what you said, okay, I really think, okay, if it is an, you can only take the undrawn piece for a 5-year term loan, I think you are out, because that was not what really the board discussed under 5520. And so I affirm on that. Maybe it is not the desired outcome for many people, but that was the fact what we discussed only in this circumstance, and it was not really give guidance how to allocate undrawn commitments. It was together as do Z, or together with this drawn piece, and which was short term, and therefore I think the reason was okay, mere economic reason, because the drawn piece was also I think paid back in one day, and the undrawn piece was cancelled in one day. But the people who brought this fact to us said, okay, but risk management is only looking at that maybe every half year, and therefore really the economic risk is half year and is not really on a day, and therefore we decided really then, okay, we should go away from the contractual term, we should really allow this behavioral. That was the reason. But if you now have different, I think, fact patterns which you say, okay, is an undrawn piece which can be drawn in the 5-year term, then the board has not discussed that. And that was not released in the background where 5520 was decided.
But what if it was
that is how it is.
How would you feel about the 30-day?
Well, I think the question is, and I completely agree with you, we shouldn't have, you know, if it's 30 days, it's okay, and if it's 35 days, it's not, in what we write up. But I think it, the most useful thing we could do for people to emphasise this point would be to refer to the basis comments, which talks about the way that the losses are looked at, sort of.
It was a basic
unit of account, which was the basic idea.
Economic.
So then you've got to think about whether the repayment term is such that it's still sensible to think about it in that way or not.
I think that would be helpful, because I think when you read paragraph 24B and you compare it to question 3, you might argue that question 3, because the balance is due at the end of every month, it's a 1-month term loan and therefore it falls outside the scope. And I don't think that was intended. But certainly that was the way I would have read the two papers,
okay.
So I think that would be helpful if that was...
Okay, so I think that the most useful way maybe to summarise this would be to start with the question which was really about the relationship between 5520 and B5539, and emphasise the fact that the sort of key scope is in 5520, to draw on some of the drivers of how that scope was set, so looking at the way things are managed, as well as the fact that it focuses on undrawn and drawn, and this idea that's in the basis about there's similar maturities between them, whether you're in the two pieces, and then try and explain how, while B5539 is not sort of determinative, we can say that generally it's relevant because of how it reinforces those concepts that are in 5520. I think then we need to talk about a little bit more about this idea of the combined cash flows, and so use the example of why the 5-year term loan is not therefore in there, but then to talk about how for shorter maturities, if it were drawn, you need to use judgment. So this grey idea, and we'll link it again to this basics concept of the idea that the way you'd be thinking about expected credit losses would be similar between the drawn and undrawn, and so that's what you should have in mind. And I think although we can't really opine on unit of account, I think we need to at least flag that the unit of account is important. And I think the important thing there is, just because you've got one document that's got a whole load of different things going on within it, doesn't mean that you automatically combine them and think them as a single unit of account.
That would be helpful to articulate just what you said there.
But
I guess, George? can I ask, because I think I'm still struggling with what should you be considering with the unit of account? And if it's a combined facility, and ultimately if nothing is drawn, it's a giant revolving facility with a limit that is set at origination. How would you determine whether you would have a drawn loan and a revolver, or it's just one giant revolver and the term loan is just the drawn piece of it? This is where, to me, and I know the problem is the way this is managed today is that people look at them as separate. And it's going to have, we didn't bring this question up about how we deal with the triggers between bucket one and bucket two, but if the credit card piece of one of these things goes bad, do you make the mortgage piece bad too? Because I don't think that's how the banks look at it today, because they're managed in silos. And the problem is that these products are attractive because they're flexible. And that's why their popularity continues to grow, both in the retail space but in the corporate space too. And that's where I still struggle with. I don't know that I heard enough in this discussion, and perhaps if we have time, a little bit more around what else would inform the unit of account. But if the limit is limited to a total amount, and it ends up being, I think as Graham put it, it all ends up being in the revolver. The residual goes to the revolver, the line of credit. Does that really mean it's separate unit of account? Because when I look at it, if it all ultimately ends up in the revolver, to me it's one giant instrument where we've just drawn pieces of it. And it's not separate, even though I know that's how it's managed. And that's why I think we struggle with this question, to say, you know, what's the limit here? How do you look at this? And if it's got contractual amounts stipulated, this facility goes on for 5 years, at which point it stops. And if it's undrawn at that point, that undrawn ability goes away. The drawn stuff, if it is anything left, say, at the end of the 5 years, what do you do with it? I think there you have to go into the facts and circumstances of the contract. Some of them would allow you to continue paying. Others would say, you owe me the money today. Even if it was drawn before, it was, you know, the term loan, if you don't pay it off by this point, you owe me that money at that point. And so then, you know, this issue about the unit of account is really the real issue. So
unit of account regarding the contractual term, or what do you mean by unit? I don't understand that. Because the 5520, it has only to deal with the contractual term instead of behavioral term. Nothing else. Nothing else. It only, you can go away from the contractual, you should use behavioral. There is not any other guidance into that. It's not saying you should account for that together. It's only saying you should use then the behavioral term instead of the contractual. And if you're saying, oh, you have an undrawn commitment for 5 years, it is a 5-year contractual term, full stop.
Exactly.
That is what it is.
Yeah. I was going to comment on, I think the confusion is, it's probably not related to 5520 on its own. It's just it's related to this example of how do you treat an example like this where you've got different facilities packaged as one whole facility. So it's Paul says, it's the unit of account that I think is confusing people. And the way I understand this is generally banks package various things together because they're trying to use the home loan or mortgage loan as security for a whole lot of different facilities. But in practice, each one of these is managed and accounted for from a credit management perspective separately. So the accounting of this, I see them being operating as separate entities, even though they share a common collateral in the background. And the actual way that you would account for it is treat each of these individually. So if they were in the package, you would have something that operates very much like a credit card. It might on its own, when treated separately, be relevant under 5520. The other portions wouldn't.
Yeah, and just because they're all in the same contract doesn't mean that you only have one unit of account.
Yes, yeah. I think that's where the confusion is coming in terms of trying to understand this.
Yeah.
So I think the two separate points, what is relevant under 5520, which
yeah.
I think has been clarified in the discussion. The other bit was just how you treat this packaged account.
Which is why, and I know I'm frustrating George because I'm not giving him an answer, but I find it hard to answer the question because we can't opine because we don't have, you know, it's going to be based on facts and circumstances. But I was hoping it would be helpful to confirm that 5520 is only capturing things with particular types of characteristics, so that answers one question. And then to be at least clear that just because something's under one document doesn't mean that that's one unit of account.
I think that's very helpful.
Yeah.
One contract doesn't mean one unit of account.
Yeah.
Any more than I would have hoped it would have when you were applying IS 39.
Yeah.
And George raised a supplementary point in terms of how do you deal with that if there's a default on one of the products and there isn't on one of the others. I think where I would start with that is if you're offering these facilities, you ought to be able to manage these facilities, and it should be relevant information that you would take into account. So if you've defaulted on your credit card, for example, doesn't necessarily mean that you've defaulted on your mortgage, but you certainly will have a different risk profile against that customer who has defaulted on that on one of those products.
So I think that's an issue in that I don't know that all these things are linked by counterparty today, and that if you do truly manage them in silos and the credit card has some, not so much a default, let's make it a little bit more interesting. Just your credit rating goes down a lot.
Yeah.
Would that necessarily say you need to be consistent, or that it would have to be something that's linked, because it is one contract, it is one borrower, that you would have to move everything to stage two, not just say the line of credit or the credit card piece that was the first to turn up a problem?
And then I think you'd be thinking from a credit risk management perspective whether you think what goes on over there is relevant to how you think about the credit risk on the other piece.
Exactly. That's correct. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm sure the regular.
We've had this conversation before throughout the process,
yeah.
And we agree. You have to look at each component separately. Just because the counterparty credit of one piece moves does not mean that every facility of that counterparty moves. We've been through this many times. That doesn't mean, though, you don't look.
Exactly, exactly.
That would be really upset. Send documents.
Yeah, I have first time doesn't say anything that document.
But Karen does. Okay.